Alrighty then. Hello there. This is North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore along with Tim Kearns. Our producer and engineer is Bill Proposky. Bill Newell back at North Shore Sports Center, Center Control. North Shore, MSO News Sports. He's back there anyway. All kinds of stuff going on. He's going to have a new Salem News Sports Writers podcast tomorrow. Tons of interviews coming up as football season is heading in to the real stretch run. The rest of high school sports heading into the playoff season right now. This is the final week, I believe, of regular season play. So it's all going to be kind of interesting, and we'll try to keep tabs on all of that. We're going to have Sean Driscoll, who's become a regular Monday night guest here. It's been great talking with the St. Mary's High School football coach every Monday night for the last few weeks. They won again, and they are in good shape in division. Where is it? Division 6, they're ranked number 3 in the power rankings. And get this, Tim. Winthrop is number 4 in the same division. St. Mary's number 3 and Winthrop number 4.
And what are the records?
What's that?
And what are their records? I know St. Mary's is like 7-1.
Yeah. Yeah, St. Mary's is you know what? Let me go find it. And this was last weekend, of course. This was as of Friday night before the Friday night games. St. Mary's was number 3 at 5-1. They're now 6-1. And Winthrop was 3-3 at number 4. And they're now 4-3. So apparently Winthrop's played the tougher schedule. But from our perspective, you know, the connections between the two schools, the two towns, is really interesting that they're so atop of the Division 6 standings.
Well, there are two programs that have long storied history, and as small schools, you tend to have the kids buy into that legacy much more so, I think, than sometimes larger schools do. So certainly, Sean had the good fortune to coach within both of those programs, and so he knows both of them very, very well.
St. Mary's High School is doing very well in the Central Catholic League. St. John's Prep doing very well, of course, in the Catholic Conference. They had a big win over the weekend against BC High. They've got another big game coming up at St. John's of Shrewsbury before they start the playoffs season. And then, of course, they've got Xaverian on Thanksgiving, and Xaverian with just one loss so far. So it's all looking like it's going to be a fun playoff season. Locally in the Northeastern Conference, Marblehead sitting atop the Dunn Division at 2-0, 5-1 overall. Peabody is just continuing to just win as they are now at 7-0 overall, 2-0 in the Lynch Division. And of course, I believe they play Salem this week. And let me just double check that. Yeah, Salem at Peabody. Of course, if Peabody wins, that's it. They win the Baker Lynch Division. And down in the Capehan League, great action down there. North Reading, Amesbury, Linfield, all with records of 4-1 in their respective divisions. North Reading leading theirs over Newburyport by a game. Amesbury and Linfield tied in the Baker Division at 4-1. Just a tremendous season going on in the Capehan League, and we've been covering a lot of that. We've got a lot of posts that we have up and will be up this week. We've already posted St. John's Prep coach Brian St. Pierre. After talking with him today, they beat BC High last weekend 41-20. They actually had a little bit of a battle in the first half, but then the Prep pulled away rather easily in the second half, winning that one again 41-20. And of note, Tim, we have to point out that Ipswich picks up its first win of the season. We hope to be talking with the Ipswich High School football coach later on this week. Hopefully, I try to get hold of him today, but hopefully tomorrow we'll be checking in with Zach Lampkin. And you were at the Beverly game, and the Beverly Panthers pulled off their first win of the season. I'm guessing with some maybe some different faces, but they certainly were charged up in their game this past weekend.
Yeah, they certainly were. You know, I got to the game, and they were down 7-0, but they were driving to tie it, and I just happened to be at the end of the field, and they ran to the left, and there was a perfect kickout block, a perfect seal block, and Pinto cut up in between the two, and it was like he was shot out of a cannon, and he just raced to the far end zone. to tie the score up, and then they went ahead, and there was so much enthusiasm along the sideline that I hadn't seen all year long in going to the Beverly games. And there was just a renewed attitude. It's like the old Beverly teams. And the kids were cheering their teammates on, and it was unabated throughout the entire game. I think that really sustained them when they had to come back a couple of times.
Pinto, is his first name Mike? Is it Mike Pinto?
I don't think it is.
Mario, I don't know, because first time...
It's been a long time ago.
Well, it's the first time I've seen it, and I got to tell you, 17 carries, 247 yards, and 3 touchdowns for the Beverly Panthers. So he deserves recognition this week. Our player of the week will be coming from Masco because they had a ridiculously incredible game against Danvers over the weekend that ended up in overtime and a disputed call or two at Masco, but with Masco coming away with a 27-21 win over Danvers. Now, we're going to be giving you post-game comments from the Marblehead at Danvers game Friday night, as I'll be at Danvers at Dr. Deering Stadium, and we'll be covering the other games in terms of the scoreboard as well. Beverly, meanwhile, I think they're off this week, aren't they?
Off this week, correct.
All right. They're off this week.
So the permits of lining up the two opponents and then looking forward to Thanksgiving.
Yeah, it's kind of, well, they'll be playing, what do you call that, consolation games as well in the next couple of weeks, won't they?
Right. Yep.
Okay. And that, you know, that schedule won't be out for a while yet as, all this stuff has to unfold. But, it's interesting the way it's shaping up. And I can't believe, Coach, I mean, here we are, we're going into week 8. The playoffs will be starting after this week, and it seems like yesterday we just got started. But on the other hand, you've only played 8 games, and you got to do the playoffs.
Don't get me started.
Okay, all right, Tim. Before we take a break and go to Sean Driscoll, what are some of your other observations? Because you know the Bruins professionally in Boston, the Bruins are off to a great start. I think they're 5-1. The Celtics are off to a great start. They play tonight. They're 3-0. The Patriots have been playing pretty well with Zappy Fever, but I guess Mac Jones will be back tonight. So on the pro scene locally, it's going fairly well. And then you got the Houston Astros against the Philadelphia Phillies and Kyle Schwarber in the World Series.
What could we have done with 40 home runs?
I think he had 45.
Yeah.
Probably more than the whole team put together. And, you know, I remember...
Yeah, well, yeah, that's the crazy thing. They let go 75 home runs.
Is that right?
I mean, two guys getting rid of two guys that they didn't think could field all that well.
Yeah. And the Killer Bees. The Killer Bees are all gone.
Yeah.
All 3 of them.
Yeah. It's just Rossi, you know. You get guys that can give you offensive output. You go, well, you know, you're a decent outfielder, but you're not as good as we want. So we're gonna send you and your 30 home runs away. We're gonna send you and your 40 home runs away, and we'll struggle as best we can. It's like, come on, and then all your power guys have down hits.
Yeah.
Many power guys have down hits.
Yeah. Well, we'll see.
No big run production.
Well, I'm rooting for the Phillies. I gotta go with the Phillies. I was cheering for Francona and the Guardians against the Yankees, but I gotta go. I'm surprised that divisional championships were swept. That was a surprise to me.
Yeah, it's who comes in the harder team, whose pitching is that much better at that time. I don't think you may not have seen that before, but, you know, the team with the attitude, the team with the momentum, you know, tends to keep that momentum. And the Yankees stumbled a bit, but then they sort of got it back at the end of the year and rode the momentum. And then, you know, Houston's just been on a roll, so.
Yeah. Well, I'd love to see Christian Vasquez come back, and I watched, I read about Pedro Martinez's comments, and it's funny, Tim, because I know we were doing a football game, one night, and you were looking at the pitch count for the Red Sox, and Pedro is not really concerned with that. He said, you know, it's a different era, they're different athletes, there's different strategies going on, and pitchers going now 5 or 6 innings. He said, that's the way it is, and he's okay with it.
I'm not.
Me either.
You know, you're taking a guy that's cruising along, throwing 80 pitches, and, oh, it's 5 innings. Oh, you got to come out because we have all these other guys that got to pitch. And it's like all the momentum, a lot of times, leaves the team because you're bringing in a guy out of the bullpen who, oh, boy, you know, by the time you leave, you're giving up a couple of runs, the lead is cut in half, and you don't have the lead anymore. And it's like the other guy's just been cruising along.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you know, it's about to go into the third time around the batting order. Oh, give me a break.
Wow. You know?
And the reason these guys get hurt so much, the arms break down, is the arms and the joints aren't strong enough. The muscles aren't strong enough. The tendons aren't strong enough. Why? Because they don't have good form. They don't follow through in their delivery. And, yeah, everybody's great. Everybody's throwing 99 to 100 miles an hour. But that takes a toll.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I've never seen, you know, growing up and watching baseball from the time that, you know, I was 7, 8 years old all the way up. You know, never saw guys going down with arm injuries the way they go down now.
Yeah.
And they're breaking down because, again, they've either thrown too many pitches when they're young, and so they're worn down in that aspect. That's why you see youth leagues now putting pitch counts on. Because coaches would just ride one kid all season long, all the way through the playoffs, and then be proclaimed a wonderful coach because his team won the state tournament. Well, yeah. And what about your number one pitcher? Well, he went off to college and broke down in fall baseball. Yeah, I wonder whose fault that was because I've seen it happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so these guys don't throw enough. I don't know how much long toss they're doing, but you rarely see that pitcher out in the outfield throwing from left field to right field doing long toss to get that arm strengthened out, to get it lengthened. And there's so many things that they don't do that they used to do. And they're just, that they break down. And then you go, you know, 85 to 100 pitches. Well, if you're doing that, everyone thinks you're an Iron Man. And you know, the start is years ago, we'll go 30 starts. If you weren't doing 25 to 30 starts a year, you weren't any good. Now, if you get a guy getting 20 starts, oh my God, it's a miracle. Oh, what endurance he has. He started 20 games this year. Well, how many did he finish? You know, how many complete games? Find me a guy that threw 5 complete games this year.
We'll pick that up on another time. That's Tim Kearns. I'm Rick Moore. Of course, Bill Proposky, our producer and engineer. Bill Newell, managing stuff back at the studio, back at headquarters, if you will, and putting stuff together for tomorrow already. We'll take a break, come back with Sean Driscoll, a St. Mary's High School football coach. This is MSONewsSports.com.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just 2 words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
MSONewsSports.com is connecting you to the North Shore. A real local news and sports podcast giving you updates from around Essex County. Spotlight feature interviews with area newsmakers. The North Shore Today Post features community updates and local photos and useful links. This is the place to hear and see positive local coverage, making the connections that support the North Shore community.
All right, great to be back now with the St. Mary's High School football coach, Sean Driscoll. And, Coach, welcome back to MSO.
Hey, good evening. How you guys doing?
I'm doing well, Tim. Yeah, there we go. Sean, you know, we talked a couple of weeks ago. We talked last week about a couple of weeks ago, but you guys continue on a roll. Let's talk a little bit about the win over Cardinal Spellman this past weekend. I looked everywhere for a game report on that and couldn't get it. So could you give us a little recap on that game, please?
Yeah, actually, it was a great day for football. It was, you know, Saturday afternoon game, kind of rare for us at home at Manning. It was senior day. We had a very good crowd for a Saturday afternoon. And we came out of the gates strong from, you know, start to finish. I think we had 28-0 lead at the half. We had two defensive scores, which is great. Our defense is playing very, very well right now, which is, they've been getting better each week. You know, I think when you get to this time of year later in the regular season and you're hoping to be, you know, firing on all cylinders, and I think we're at that point. But as far as recapping the game, you know, the top three, you know, Derek Calangis, Dave Brown, Ernie Panaris, all had three rushing touchdowns, which all had one rushing touchdown for three of the touchdowns. And then our defense scored two. And we were fortunate enough to get a lot of our younger kids a lot of playing time this weekend between the end of that game and the JV game. So it was a good day. It was a good weekend. And it was a good way to send the seniors off in their last regular season game at home. And now we're on to Archbishop Williams for next week.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get a chance to get a lot of your second and third team into the game, Coach?
Yeah, yes, it was good. It was a good day. Everyone saw the field, and I think, you know, playing a Spellman team who's kind of reeling, losing their coach a few weeks ago, after, you know, starting off on a decent start for them with a young team, losing their coach midway through the year and them kind of regrouping, it was a tough haul for them. But we did play a lot of our younger players, some of them that normally didn't start for a start of the game. So it was a good day for everyone.
I think there's a lot of discussion we could do at some point, maybe in the off season philosophically, that might even start with Cardinal Spellman's situation and other situations in other towns like Duxbury and so on. But we're going to leave that and stick with the good stuff, with the positive stuff with the kids and all. And Sean, I want to ask you, as we approach the playoffs now, which Tim and I were discussing, it's like it's so strange to be going into the playoffs, no matter how many times we've done this in the past, this time of year. The most recent power rankings had, before Friday night's game, had St. Mary's in Division 6 at number 3 and Winthrop at number 4, and both teams won. So how do you look, maybe personally, I'm not even sure you would get into the coaching aspect of looking at the power rankings, but what does it mean right now in terms of all your experience in coaching with this new system and what your goals are?
Well, I think, when, you know, you start a year, your goal is always first you want to, you know, win your league championship or compete to the top couple in the league, which is your first goal should be. I think the league is always important. And then obviously making the playoffs. And with 16 teams making it and how the system works, you know, the point system can be confusing to a lot of people. But as I tell my kids, you know, as long as you keep playing well and winning and you're playing good opponents, I think that's a lot to do with it too. It's all based on the teams you're playing, because you'll see some teams maybe on there that might be 4-2 that'll blow a team that are 3-3 or maybe, you know, 3-4. Because of, you know, the opponent value, I think, is big. And I think when people make their schedules, when football programs make schedules, they look at some of that stuff, which is good. But going into the year, your goal is to make it and get through your regular season with a good record and then start fresh, you know, week 9 with your first playoff game, hopefully, and get off and get going. A lot of teams in that thing you've probably never seen before. You know, in Division 6, there seems to be a lot more teams from around this area, which is a lot of familiarity. I think we have 4 teams from our league that are in Division 6, so, and everyone seems the only one. And it's very, very competitive, too. If you look at the top, I think the top 4 or 5 teams in the thing, Linfield in there, you have Winthrop in there, and, you know, some of those teams from Central Mass, you know, BVT, they're right there in the mix. Abington, and not to mention Rockland is probably the class of Division 6s from what you see and what you hear, you know, coming off a Super Bowl championship. So, you know, we just try to stay focused on what we got to do. And, like, you know, this game is a big game this week. We're playing Archbishop Williams. You know, they've gotten better each week. They're trying to make the playoffs. They're at 3 wins right now, and I think if they you know, they beat us and play us well, they're going to get in there. So it's going to be a challenge with a team that struggled early in the year, and now they really bounce back, and they get some great play out of their defense. It's playing really well.
Mm-hmm.
John, how similar or dissimilar is the point system they use today to the one they used when they first set up the Super Bowls, where, you know, you were playing in your conference, you got points for a win against your league opponent that you were playing every week, but then you got points based on how they had done in the past, and if you played up a division, you got more points. If you played down a division, you got fewer points. How is it similar to that today?
I think it's very similar, except I don't think the division you play against, whether you play up or down, does not matter. It's really how that team does during the course of the year. In the old system, it was really based off the teams that you played, how they did, as well as how you did in your league as well. Was some value to that too, if I remember correctly. But, you know, I don't think any system is perfect. I think every year you're going to have some people, you know, left out of the dance, so to speak, that think they should be in based on their record. It doesn't always work. I think you had a couple teams last year, and I'm sure you'll have a couple more teams this year with it. And I know everyone's looking at maybe changing it again, maybe not the rating system, but how many teams make it in instead of 16, have eight teams make it and play a 9-game season, which a lot of people seem to be in favor of. We'll see how it plays out. You know, I think the system has worked, I think, for a lot of schools that play that competitive schedule.
Coach, brag about some of your kids.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited. We've been getting some real good play out of our sophomore quarterback. He's been playing well, Tyler Guy. You know, he started to pick it up for week 4 for us at that spot, getting some reps, and he's kind of taken over that spot, and he's been playing really well. He's also playing very well on defense. You know, as a sophomore, you know, he's just kind of easing his way in slowly, and now he's in there full-time, so he's been really good. You know, Dave Brown, he's a, you know, Division VI player of the year last year in the Herald. He's had a nice solid year for us. He's doing well, breaking some big plays. And again, on defense, he's really, people underestimate him. They think of him as an offensive player, and they don't really consider him on defense.
Mm.
He's playing really well there. And then Derek Calandris, our other running back, both sides of the ball, really, really getting better each week. And he had a good year last year, and he's having even a better year this year, you know. And then up front, you know, we have a senior heavy defensive line with Jack Marks, Nick Sacco, and Tommy Flasker. Tommy Flasker's, you know, has had a great couple of years, been with starting for us since the freshman year, senior year. He's playing hard. You know, Nick Sacco and Jack Marks, great on defense, and they're both two solid tight ends for us as well. So we're getting a lot of contributions from people that have been with us and playing for 3 or 4 years. It's always nice to have the veteran leadership too, you know.
How will you change anything as you go into the time before the playoffs, Sean? Do you change anything up, or do you pretty much keep the schedule the same, the practice routines the same?
Yeah, you try to pretty much keep everything the same schedule-wise stuff. You know, at this time of year, I think, you know, it's getting to that year where you're getting your nicks and bruises, and not everyone is fully healthy. I think you look at it that way and how you prepare and practice for a team. And now, like I said, now this time of year, you're kind of taking your foot off a little bit, putting the game plan in, maybe not as much, not as physical in practice that you might have been week 2 or week 3 early in the year, you know, and getting people lined up in the right spot and giving them the direction we think you need to be successful. And that's where we're at least. I know some coaches might think otherwise, but at the same time, you do what's best for your team. And I think a lot of people would say the same thing. You enter, you know, week 8, and like you say, if you don't know it by now, you're never going to know it. So whatever you're doing, you just got to take the good stuff and roll with it, you know.
What are the responsibilities of your captains?
Well, we look, first of all, outside of the building, you know, outside of school and in school, we want leadership in the school from our seniors as a whole, not so much as the captains. You want to give them great responsibility, which at our school, we have a great support staff there, and they do a nice job outside of school as well. And you can tell the kids that, you know, get it. They're on a schedule. They get into school on time, get their work done, get to practice, and they get a routine down, and they follow the routine, and I think that's made this group pretty good over the years.
So how's everything going besides football, Sean? I'm running out of questions.
Good, yeah. No, things are good. Like I said, just looking forward to having finishing up the season strong. You know, we got to get on Archbishop Williams. It's been, you know, traditionally a tough, hard hitting game, and I'm looking forward to that on Friday.
You know, you look at the Archies, and they've got a mixed bag here. They're 2-3 in the league, but they're 4-4 overall. And as you pointed out, they're on that precipice. They're on 16, and if they win, they're in. If they don't, who knows? So tell me a little bit how you look at these guys when you see them on the videos, without giving anything away.
Yeah, well, you look at them and you see them each week get better and better each week, and I know the coaching staff over there does a great job with what they have, and they got a nice little facility. And like I said, they're getting better each week. As I was telling our kids today, they're playing with nothing to lose. You know, it'd be a huge win for them would be coming out this week and make the playoffs, and they could really, you know, talk about their season being a little successful with a young team. I think on our side of things, we have to come out and, you know, forget about the last two or three games where we came out pretty well and, you know, worry about the next game and say next play, next quarter, all that. I think with that said, I mean, we have to come out and take care of business, because if you let a team like that hang around, they're going to get you. Mm-hmm.
Tim, final thoughts for Coach Driscoll.
Just want to wish my good friend a lot of luck to the end of this season. Get it on, keep him on a roll, Sean, and bring up a Super Bowl.
Yes, well, that would be nice. One game at a time, but I appreciate the support and guys reaching out and promoting our school in the game of high school football. I think anyone who's promoting student athletes being active and playing sports, especially football, is a great thing.
Well, you've made our Monday nights a lot of fun, I'll tell you that, and very informative. And, Coach, always great to hear you talk about the kids as well. We'll talk to you soon. Good luck this week.
Thank you. Take care, guys.
Thanks, Sean. Take care. All right, that's Sean Driscoll, who is the head coach at St. Mary's High School Football, and great guy. We've known him for years, and he has helped us here at MSO immeasurably over the years, and great to see him doing so well. And it's just, I'm just kind of blown away that St. Mary's and Winthrop are 3-4 at the moment, because Coach used to coach at Winthrop High School, as everybody knows. And Winthrop for us, Tim, that sort of got us off of the ground many, many years ago.
And he's always been a great friend to us, and being available and having kids available for us to talk.
Yep.
Again,
excellent. All right. Okay, time to pause and come back with Gary Larrabee, sports historian and golf writer. This is North Shore Sports Night on MSO News Sports. You can always reach us at msonewsports@gmail.com. And I got to tell you, what Bill is lining up again, Bill Newell, this week, is stuff you can't miss. You know, his pre-football games show, man, you got to listen to them. They're so informative, get so many coaches on, such an insight into high school football, and all of his interviews and so much good stuff up there. So please, plus we have a lot of North Shore news on the website every single week with interviews and stories, and our daily podcast and our daily news page with community notes and so on, called North Shore Today. We're so happy to be able to do that with the demise of the last local radio station in the area, and also, of course, with so many newspapers struggling at the moment. And we appreciate all of the cross promotions and help we've gotten from the Salem News, the Gloucester Times, the Newburyport Daily News, the Daily Item, and of course, that's it, right? I think that's it. That's all four papers. So it's been great. All right, we'll take this little pause here. We'll be back with Gary Larrabee. So please stay with us. This is North Shore Sports Night.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at moynihanlumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
back now with Gary Larrabee, sports historian, golf writer, and longtime familiar face here at the Salem News on the North Shore. Gary, welcome back.
Great to be back, as always.
Oh, man, always great. Now, you know, Tim and I were trying to figure out how long we've been doing this, and where is it, Tim? We go back to 05, maybe?
06,
okay. He's the man, he knows. And Gary, you've been so much a part of this, we really appreciate it. It makes Monday night go by so fast for us. All right, so let me see. I'm pulling up the agenda. Where do we start?
I think we have to start with the familiar names who gave us the headlines from the weekend golf. And, of course, the number one name, of course, is McIlroy, Rory McIlroy from Holywood, Northern Ireland, after he won the PGA Tours event yesterday. The CJ Cup in Ridgeland, South Carolina. He became the number one golfer in the world once again and capped off a terrific year to this point with, I think, 4 tour wins, but no majors. I think he finished in the top 8 in all 4 majors, but interesting battle of wits on Twitter, if you saw any of that this afternoon, Tim, where some people were demeaning Rory McIlroy's great achievement of winning his 4th tour event this year and going back to number one, despite the fact he hadn't won any majors this year.
Well, you know, the winners of on the tour of late have been so varied, you know, that to win 4 anywhere is a good thing. And I mean, how many first time winners did we see in the past year? The names on the majors are like, who are you? You know, to the casual viewer. So Rory wins 4, gets back to number one. What are people expecting? How many multiple time winners are there on the tour this year that have played at overall as well as Rory has played?
So true, Tim. Of course, this is his 23rd win on the PGA Tour, his 31st win worldwide. And it says here in my dispatch that it was the 9th time he's reached number one on the world, behind only Tiger Woods and Greg Norman, who have both been number one 11 different occasions. And very impressive stuff. And
Gary, I know he did it to honor you, as listeners may not know, this is your final call in on Monday night, except for the rare occasion where something startling will break in the golf world or in the world of sport. But as part of your retirement, you're stepping back from the Monday night calls, and I, for one, am very sad. I'm going to miss you on Monday night. You've helped keep me on my toes and expand my own knowledge of the game of golf and allow me to share my appreciation for the golden age of golf, I might say, back in the 60s and 70s when I was growing up. And on Sunday mornings I would sit down after coming home from church with my dad, and we watched the Wide World of Golf. And the match play that was going on, and learning from my dad some of the intricacies of the game and some of the names of the great golfers of that time age. So I want to thank you for all that you've given to me as well as to the listeners.
I second that.
Well, thank you. The pleasure's been all mine, guys. And of course, you know, I think I'll be, My wife says I'll be talking golf and writing about golf even after I die.
I hope so.
And somehow, somewhere, but it's just become my lifeline over these years, and it's been a thrill to be a part of this podcast and been a very much important part of my golfing life. And I think we've done it for a lot of years, and it's been a treat every time. And we've had some spirited conversations, some disagreements, but there's so much to disagree with and so much to agree with in golf that it's been a treat every week.
Yeah, and I, Tim, I got to interject here. because when Tim, there have been nights, Gary, when Tim can't make it, and I am so intimidated by the knowledge, both of you guys, your knowledge of golf. And, Tim, Gary has nursed me through all of this on Monday nights, so I appreciate it, Gary. Thank you.
Always my pleasure. And of course, we should also talk briefly about getting back on the subject at hand.
Mm-hmm.
Another very familiar name in professional golf, Lydia Ko, her name is Korean, but I believe she's from New Zealand, Tim. She won her 18th LPGA title, over in South Korea, yesterday with a 7-under par 65 final round, and she's still very young. I don't know if she's 30 yet, but she still gets some great golf ahead of her, and another great name in professional golf worldwide won yesterday, so that was very good for golf, I think. And I know this gentleman is definitely from New Zealand. Stephen Alker won his 4th Champions Tour event of the year in Richmond, Virginia. A complete unknown till he broke through and got on the Champions Tour last fall. I believe he's won more events this year on the Champions Tour than anybody. I think Padraig Harrington has 3, Tim. Correct me if I'm wrong, but some very familiar names in the winner's circle over the weekend.
Yeah, I was just checking the scoreboard for the BMW Ladies Championship, Gary, and she is a New Zealander. You are correct, as so often you are.
Well, just a coincidence. There are 2 New Zealanders winning yesterday, though. Alker, I know, is from New Zealand, and now we know that Lydia is, too. When was the last time 2 different professional golfers from New Zealand? Hello, yeah. Bob Charles. Bob Charles, where are you? One on the same day, quite a unique accomplishment. I'm not sure if it ever happened before.
So this is a name, KJ Choi, used to be much bigger on the, more prominent on the tour. He came in 2nd.
He's from China, I believe, or from Taiwan, maybe?
Looking at it, I'm going to say it's Taiwan. Looking at that
flag. Wasn't he the fellow who had a double chip during a U.S. Open? Is that the same guy, or am I thinking of someone else?
No, I think it was him.
Another great piece of trivia. Another wonderful piece of trivia for our listeners. The other big story, of course, we should talk about briefly, is that tomorrow, Tuesday, since we're doing this on Monday night, the high school state championships in all 3 divisions are being held tomorrow. And, of course, we're all counting on Beverly to come back with a Division II state championship, although they have some very good teams to deal with, including defending champion Bishop Stang. But the Ryan boys and Aiden LeBlanc have a very good shot tomorrow, as does, I think, an outside shot from Mascanoma, who's also playing in Division II. So we'll see how they play tomorrow. We've got 3 individuals from St. John's Prep playing on Division I, not for the team championship, but for the individual championship. So a big day tomorrow for our high school golfers, and we wish all of our players the very, very best playing Division II at Maplegate, Division I at Renaissance up in Haverhill, and Division III at Ledges Golf Club way out in Western Mass in South Hadley, right next to Amherst.
Yeah, we do want to wish that. We've had a lot of good golf played by a lot of young men this spring in the North Shore.
No, the talent level, as we've talked about it before, Tim, the talent level gets better and better every year at the junior and high school level, and it's certainly been the case here on the North Shore, and I think we have an awful lot to look forward to beyond tomorrow's championships when we get around to a new season in 2023.
Yeah, and we'll be checking in with you, obviously, for that. But in the meantime, you know, big stuff, little stuff, whatever you want to talk about, Gary, at any time, just let us know. We always want to have you on. But are you working on anything to be published soon?
Yes, I'm working on an updated history of Salem Country Club, like the first quarter century of their second century.
Mm-hmm.
And that book will be out in the spring. We'll distribute it to the membership in the spring, and I'm sure the club will make copies available to anyone who wants to purchase one at the club. I'm also beginning a project, guys, for the Golf Course Superintendents Association of New England. They turn 100 in 2024, and I've been honored to be asked by them to put together a 100-year history for them. So I still get lots of good stuff to do, but it's time to cut back and we've been much more selective. But it's been a joy, guys, and a privilege to be with you all these years. And I'm sure we'll be talking next year at some point or whatever. Any big local golf news breaks, I will always welcome the opportunity to give you my 2 cents worth.
Absolutely. And when you get a chance, Gary, please text me or email me your address again, please, because I can't I had to change phones. I had to buy a damn new phone last week, and it's driving me nuts. So I need your address again, please, okay?
I will send it over shortly.
Thank you.
I'll talk to my executive secretary, make sure I know my own address.
Okay. All right, Tim, any final thoughts for Mr. Larrabee?
Gary, I just wish you a long and healthy retirement with all the joys that it's meant to bring you.
Well, thank you, Tim, and we will carry on, and we will be thinking golf and dreaming golf and talking golf and down the road, I am sure, at some point. Look forward to all of it.
All right, appreciate it, Gary. Be well. We'll talk to you soon.
Stay well, man. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Gary. All right, that's the great Gary Larrabee, sports historian, golf writer. More to come, but he's going to take it down a notch as Tim and I have done over the years. Well, me more than Tim. Tim's still at it, but man, I've got some scores I'm trying to run down here, but I can't. I got them messed up, so I can tell you if I go. Wait 1 second, Tim. Northeast Conference. These are boys soccer scores, I believe. But yes, they are. Okay. In boys soccer, final scores here this evening in the Northeastern Conference. Beverly and Peabody, 0-0, or as you would say, Tim?
Nil-nil.
Nil-nil. All right. And that's in girls soccer, in the Cape Ann, the Northeastern Conference. I think I had those scores as well. Let me find those. Saugus lost to Swampscott 3-1. And Beverly and Peabody tied at 2. Masconomet 1. Marblehead 0, as I've learned how to say. And back to boys soccer. It was Georgetown 7. Mystic Valley 2. Bishop Feehan over St. Mary's. I don't have the score, but Bishop Feehan won that game, I believe. Triton 2. Whittier 1. Beverly and Peabody scoreless tie. And Swampscott 3. Saugus 1. And field hockey. Pentucket beat Linfield 1-0, and Watertown beat Wakefield 7-0. That's all the scores that we have so far. All right, Tim, we're going to take one more pause here, come back with Mike Grenier, talk some Celtics. So get ready to talk some hardball, hardwood, Tim.
Round ball.
Red on round ball. There you go. All right, so we'll be back here in just a second.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at moynihanlumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
The North Shore is listening to MSONewsSports.com and our great selection of podcasts.
Hi, this is Phil Stacey, Executive Sports Editor at the Salem News. Make sure to listen to our podcast every week with the sports writers from the Salem News, including Matt Williams, Nick Giannino, and myself.
MSO News Sports, connecting you to the North Shore.
All righty then, we are back with another sports writer here, extraordinaire, Mike Grenier, who's been so kind to be with us for quite a while now, talking about different sports, but mainly focusing on the Celtics. And before we get started, I'm just going to mention, I'm going to ask one name about your reaction, then you guys can talk about the Celtics. But Vonleh, is that his name?
Noah Vonleh, yes.
Talk to me.
Abel, Massachusetts. He's been in the league 4 or 5 years. He got a start the other night. Of course, he had some time with the Knicks where he averaged 8.5 points a game. I thought he was an ideal pickup in the offseason as like sort of a seventh, eighth man type of thing where he can come in, particularly for Horford. And sure enough, even though we're only 3 games into the season, that cropped up Saturday night, and Horford couldn't make the starting lineup. I think he was just resting, all they're saying he had some back stiffness. But Noah Vonleh right away got on the glass, got a couple offensive rebounds. They're not asking him to score, but he gets the putbacks and those kinds of important baskets in the course of a game. He's not a selfish player. He's not looking for any offense. He's looking to contribute any way he can. So to me, he's that perfect complementary player that a young coach like Mazzulla will want, who will not complain about anything, even playing time. He'll just be happy to fulfill any kind of role. So that was my take on him. And, you know, I just remember him from his days at Haverhill. And then he went to different schools, and he's been around the league 4 or 5 years. And Tim, I think it's great to have a local guy on the Celtics.
Oh, it certainly is. I mean, it's probably piqued a lot of people's interest in the stuff because it's got some scrambling for yearbooks at Haverhill High School, finding out where the hell was this guy.
Right. He also went to prep school. He wasn't at Haverhill High too long because he was a prospect, and, you know, therefore a lot of those kids don't stay at their hometown high school because the prep schools can expose them to better competition. And in this case, it worked out for Noah Vonleh like it did for many kids. You know, like Michael Carter Williams, same thing. I will remember covering him his freshman year at Hamilton Wenham Regional. Next thing you know, he was going to prep school in Rhode Island. And now he's been injured the last 2 years, but he's had an 8-9 year career in the NBA. So it works out well for those guys. But how about those Celtics, Tim? 3-0 at this point. And isn't it great to have the Patriots and the Celtics both playing on a Monday night, prime time?
Yeah, you know, there are a lot of people right as the season began, a lot of pundits were suddenly writing about how good the Celtics could be and why it wasn't really a surprise of how good they were going to be. And certainly they're playing that way. They're taking the bull by the horns. They're playing aggressively. They're playing, I think, as the expectation has been set. Yep. And because of that, I think they're surprising not only the fan base, I think they're surprising some of the teams they play.
Right. And you know what I like, Tim and Rick, and you guys can two of their first 3 games have been on the road, and they're on the road again tonight in Chicago. And they beat a Miami team that will probably be right there in the thick of things next May and June on the road. And they did it without Horford. And how do you like this, Tim, Andre? Jason Tatum, 35 points a game. Jaylen Brown, 25 a game. Derek White, who scored 26 the other night, 13 a game. Grant Williams, 12.7. And by the way, he's shooting 80% from the floor. A small sample size, but still it shows that he can hit the open shot. And then you have Brogdon, I love him, coming off the bench, averaging 12 a game, and Marcus Smart, who's a starter, averaging 9.5. That's tremendous balance up and down the lineup, although, of course, Tatum is off the charts right now. Only 3 games, but he is shooting 59%, and he's averaging 34.7. That's magnificent.
Yeah, you know, I was reading online, somebody wrote that White, was playing at a renewed and a higher sense of confidence than he did even last year, and that certainly bodes well for the South because you get him coming off the bench, and there's no fear, there's no lag, it's you know, get on the bike and ride ride like the wind, just continually take the ball to the hoop, get things rolling, get things set up, hitting that open man. And run your ass off.
Yeah, I think at one point the other night he was like 5 for 5 on 3-pointers, and he has been started. He started a couple games, and I think we can attribute his improvement to the fact that, of course, last year he came from the Spurs in the middle of the season. He didn't have a full training camp and all that. This year, he's with the Celtics organization during the summertime, working out with the guys, and, of course, having a full training camp and a full preseason with Boston. So he's fitting in much better with what Marcus Smart likes to do and what Horford likes to do and what Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown like to do. I just think it's a much better fit from the very get-go for Derek White. And so, therefore, you know, we're holding out high hopes that he can continue this level of performance.
I want to ask you, go ahead, Tim.
I think that's the key, and I think you're right. You know, having the full preseason, having an off season to hang around with the guys and get to know. You know, we all played pickup sports with the kids in the neighborhood, and you know, you take on other guys, and you knew the kids in the neighborhood. You knew what they could do. You knew who you could rely on, and they had that same kind of relationship with you. And so you use that to go and play other guys from other areas. And a lot of times, you know, it served your team well. We look at veteran high school teams, the kids that have played for 2 or 3 years together. Those are the kids that their senior year, they dominate their league. They get into the playoffs and they go deep into the playoffs. So it's nothing we should be really surprised at with the Celtics. I'm just wondering, why so many teams have such a problem with it?
Right, exactly. I like what you just said there. I think the familiarity in this case is helping Derek White. It's helping all of his teammates, and he is an athletic, agile player who could play a bit. He could play some tough defense. So, just having him just flourish early in the season is such a great sign for the Celtics. And of course, Grant Williams. Sometimes I think he does a lot more talking than I'd like to see him on the court with the officials and all that. And sometimes I think he thinks he's better than he really is. He tries to extend his limitations. However, you can't argue with the results so far. He's shooting a ridiculous, like, 80% from the floor because he's hit virtually all of his three-point attempts. So that's not going to obviously continue shooting 80%. If he does, he'll be in the Hall of Fame within a year. But I love what he's doing, and I think it just adds to Mazzulla's feeling about the depth on this team. And the guy we haven't mentioned, Rick, Sam Hauser, is a 6'8", 6'8", blonde kid. He looks like he just stepped off the playgrounds of Indianapolis or something. And he can really shoot the three, a high arcing shot. And so far, the coach has been able to spot him in there, not when the team is way up or way. I mean, he's just being used in the flow of the game and asked to contribute in the flow of the game and not when it's just a blowout. So I love the fact that they're using him early in the season and that he's contributing so quickly. This has to do something for his confidence level.
What's different between last year and this year? Because at this time last year, Celtics, remember they had 25-point leads in the second half.
Yeah.
They had 12-point leads in the fourth quarter with 2 minutes to go. And they just kept losing. What's different between the beginning of last year and this year with respect to what you're seeing out there?
I think a couple. Well, first of all, is that the roster has changed a little bit. You had Schroeder there last year. You had Richardson there last year for a while. I don't know if they totally bought into Ime Udoka early in the season. The whole team didn't buy into Ime Udoka until I still remember Christmas Day, Rick, when they lost on a last second prayer by the Knicks, who were not a good team, and the Celtics fell by one or two games below 500, and it was already like almost New Year's. So they were below 500 through the first 45, 46 games of the year. I think what I'm seeing this year is a better chemistry right from the get-go, and I think you can attribute that to the fact that there's more maturity from Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. Horford, of course, he's a perfect team-type player. Derek White, as we mentioned, fitting right in. A guy like Peyton Pritchard, who's been around 2 or 3 years now, has hardly played, but he's not complaining. He's going to get his minutes at some point in the season. So I just think there's a better chemistry, and maybe they're just really, really relating well to Coach Mazzulla, a 33, 34-year-old guy, right from the beginning here. It seems like they're playing really well. I know they're playing really hard for him right now. And I also get the feeling, Rick and Tim, that losing to the Golden State Warriors and coming so close to winning it has something to do with their motivation this year. They want to establish themselves as a contender, early in the season here. And I think it left a sour taste in their mouth to not complete the job last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it did. I think that it's a result of the team coming together after that. After basically New Year's. Remember last year when we were talking throughout the fall, they're a 500 team. Well, now they're
right.
Two games below. You know, well, they crawled back. We used to be amazed. They crawled back to 500. Oh, now they slipped back again. And
right.
You know, we kept. That's who they are. That's the way they're playing. And you know, as Bill Parcells says, you are what your record says you are, and you're a sub 500 team. The way that they were playing, and it was after you know you and I gave them the method to solve the problem. Did you remember?
Yes, okay. I'm sure glad that they were listening to their iPod,
yeah.
Phones, hearing us criticize them a little bit, right, Rick and Tim, because they got the message late, midway through last season. They carried it right through the playoffs, you know, and won a couple 7-game series. I also think, actually, we just mentioned that, winning 2 7-game series against quality opponents, meaning the Milwaukee Bucks in the playoffs and the Miami Heat, who were the number one seed in the East because they had a better record than themselves, in the playoffs, winning a 7-game series. Those two things also did something for their confidence level and their momentum heading into this season. I also think that Tatum and Brown are making a conscious effort to take it to the basket more and maybe not settle for the three-pointer. We've seen that early on. I mean, Jaylen Brown was definitely their best player the first two games. And, of course, Tatum had 40 points in Game 3. So even as Jaylen Brown went 4-for-16 from the floor. So I think Tatum has really established himself as a guy who one or two bad games aren't going to bother him. I think he wants to reach that level of dominance that he sees from other stars in the league, and I think he'll do whatever it takes to maintain that level of play.
I want to ask you one. Go ahead, Tim. Go ahead.
I think also it's part of his teammates' realization that, yeah, he is the stud. But I really like your comment about, you know, him and Brown going to the basket more, because
yes.
Going to the basket is going to open up your jump shots. It's going to allow you to get, you know, in better ranges. Everybody's going to be looking to have their defensive stance with the right foot dropped so that you can turn, you can pivot to cover the drive to the hoop. And having that body turn takes you out of effective defending and squaring up, defending against the long-range jumper. So it gives you a more open jump shot. You're going. They know there's better possibility of you going to the hoop, and that also means that the other players on the floor follow you in looking for either a pass or a rebound.
No question. I you made a great point there, Tim. I believe that if Tatum and Jaylen Brown are taken to the basket, then Derek White's going to want to take it to the basket, and House is going to want to take it to the basket once in a while. And we know Marcus Smart is totally fearless. He'll be taken to the basket whether he's got three guys on him or nobody on him. So yeah, I love the chemistry on this team so far. I think it bodes well. You know, if they can just avoid injuries here and just hang in there and be healthy all year, they're going to be a huge factor in this thing. As I mentioned, I really believe they're certainly one of the three or four teams in the Eastern Conference that has a heck of a shot at getting to the finals.
There's two things I want to wrap up my portion on. One was there was a play, I don't know which game it was, but Jason Tatum was heading to the basket, and he sort of almost had an uncontested layup. But he fired one of these over-the-head, like a hook shot pass over to the corner, in the corner, where Hauser was. And Hauser, there was nobody near him. So Hauser put it up for three, and I thought, damn, you wouldn't have seen that a couple years ago. But
I completely agree, and I think, again, is that from Tatum, having seen Hauser in the preseason and during the summertime, knows that this kid can hit a three, and Hauser has the confidence to take it in the game situation. So, again, that's another weapon now that the Celtics have, and it'll last for 82 games and beyond.
Well, I think
Hauser is one of those guys that can count on to hit a three.
But it also speaks to the maturity of Tatum. And before,
no question.
Tim's going to have the final question or comment here, but just tell me about the defense, because there's been a lot of scoring in this first three games.
I agree. You know, that's the one thing we can pick on. That's a great point. That's the one thing we can pick on, because the Orlando Magic, whatever it was the other night, 125, 126, they scored too many points. And the Philadelphia 76ers scored 117 in the opening game against the Celtics. And the Celtics were obviously one of the premier defensive teams in NBA last year. So that's the area they need to fix, because they cannot be counted on to score 130 every night and win 130 to 123. So they do have to address that issue, and it is not a small issue. So three games, it's kind of been hidden so far, but that's a great point, Rick. They have to fix the defense.
Well, I think you're going to have nights where you're going to score a lot of points, and the other team is going to score a lot of points because you're so busy running up the court trying to score the points.
Yeah.
The other guy is going to have that same opportunity, and it just behooves your team to make sure that at the end of the day, you've got one more point than they do. So
yeah.
I think you're going to have nights where they're going to put up a lot of points, and the other guy is going to score them. But again, we've seen already that, they've been able to play defense and keep the scores below 100, and still win the game.
Yep,
so
yep.
I think we have to kind of expect it because we don't see those big scores like we used to in the NBA.
Right.
So, but they're going to happen. Guys are going to have nights where they're hot, and it's going to be an old playground game where, okay, who's taking the last shot for the winner?
Yep, I agree. And, Rick, we're probably out of time, so I'll close and say I agree with Tim on that one.
All right. Yeah, it's time, boys, and it's been another healthy discussion. Celtics starting at 8 o'clock tonight. Patriots starting, at about 15 minutes. So
sure.
We're going to have a lot to talk about next week.
That's right. It'll be great. By then, maybe the Celtics could be. It's funny, too. They've only played one home game. So if they can win tonight, win 3 out of 4 on the road, that would be a phenomenal accomplishment to begin the season.
Absolutely. Mike, thank you so much as always, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, great talking to you guys. Thank you.
All right, take care, Mike. All right, that's Mike Grenier, another sports writer of repute. I don't know that he's a golf writer, but he's definitely a sports writer. Knows all about the Celtics, I'll tell you that. It's always fun. And, Tim, it's been fun tonight. Fast hour.
Yeah, it was, and I'm sad that Gary's not going to be around. I sent him a personal note today, thanking him for everything that he's brought to the show, brought to my own golf knowledge, and he's certainly going to be missed.
Well, I'm just glad we were able to be, a vessel for his knowledge, enthusiasm, good humor, and general journalism. Superior writing and talking and all, because he gets stuff out there that, good Lord, nobody else has. You don't get that a lot in local news or sports or whatever anymore due to the way things have gone. And so it's great to be able, along with the Nick and Nick show, the North Shore Sports Desk, they have Gary on every week as well. So for us to be able to get that information out there, I think it's a privilege because he just knows so much and is so knowledgeable. But he also, as we've talked to him, he knows a lot about a lot of other sports too.
Oh, he certainly does. And he loved to get me going. So.
And you love to get him going.
Yes, you have to challenge him.
Mm-hmm.
But he was always, I always was respectful to his opinion and mine to his, and we just it made the time go by. I respect everything about Gary. He did a great favor for me a few years back when I had bought his book, The Gold Coast on North Shore Golf Course History, and for a buddy of mine who's a really big golfer and big golfer. And I asked Gary, without him even knowing, I asked him if he would autograph the book for him, and he was most gracious. I met him at Salem Country Club, and we had a talk, and he signed it for my buddy. And, he didn't have to do that, but he did. He gave me the time, and he autographed it. I don't know my buddy still has it out on his coffee table.
That's right? Cool. And Gary's a Hall of Famer. I mean, it's just incredible. Mike is, too. These guys are among, and we've talked about it before, but they're among a pantheon of local sports writers over the years who have just been absolutely fantastic. And, the stuff that they used to put out, I mean, there used to be two editions of the Salem News daily. There was a morning edition and an evening edition, and they had to contribute so much. And the other thing about both Gary and Mike is that they were so ensconced in the professional scene and working at that professional level, in all sports, because they covered each of them covered more than golf or basketball respectively. But they also, they got down and dirty, man. They rolled up their sleeves. They went to high school gyms. They went to football games, you know, locally. They talked to the kids. And I just think it's that's what good sports and sportsmanship is all about. And then they shared everything with everybody.
Yeah, you know, and share their expertise with us, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I lost you, Tim. I think.
I said, you know, them coming on and sharing their knowledge is better than what we do every week.
Right, agreed, and we appreciate that. We appreciate, as I was saying earlier, the Salem News sports writers, the news writers, the Gloucester Times sports writers and news writers, Newburyport Daily News, over at the Item, even up at the Eagle Tribune, and it's just great. It's great to be part of that. And I think the thing is, Tim, I don't know about you, I read six or seven newspapers online daily, plus the BBC and stuff like that. And you've got to go a long way and dig deep to find something good and positive. But with sports, you don't have to go very far.
Oh, no. You know, and you know, these guys have been just, you know, the aces of the sportscasters, you know. And you know, we did a thing. We asked, you know, who are the great writers, great sports writers. And, you know, we asked them to note somebody. And, you know, we get down the line a year from now, and we start doing the same thing. Gary and Mike, we're going to mention their name.
Oh yeah, yeah, no question. Absolutely. You talked about the golden age, man, and that was it. So it's great to be able to still be part of that, and to still learn about it. And what was I watching the other day? Something about learning the history of the sport on a major league level. And they were teaching somebody about, I don't know whether it was Bill Russell or who it was. Oh, what was that, Tim?
I was talking with Mike, and we were talking about, you know, the guys in the team not knowing the history of the sport.
Oh, it was Jalen.
Understanding that, you know, the contribution of a guy like Bill Russell.
Right. And then, but it was during, I think the first Celtics home game, or the only one they've had, that Jalen Brown gave a history lesson, on the court, you know, with the microphone to the crowd, which was sort of directed at his teammates, and that was great. By the way, you must stay tuned and check in to the website this week. Bill Newell is going to have another exclusive interview. You talk about one of the all-time greats and up on Mount Olympus. He's going to have another interview with Mike Lynch this week. So we're going to get the latest on how Mr. Lynch is doing. There's a fantastic, if you just Google Mike Lynch on our search engine here on MSO, a couple of months ago, an incredibly optimistic and fun interview to listen to with Mike Lynch, who was in, I don't know what rehab, but he's rehabilitating from a stroke, and just the most positive and awesome guy. And Mike's going to be talking with Bill Newell this week. So be sure to pay attention. Check on MSO News Sports for that interview.
I certainly will. You know, I had the opportunity to talk to Lindsay several times. And I was at the Bobblehead Swansky game one year. Thanked him, and I was in the booth, and there was a seat open next to me. So I called to him, and he came up and he sat down. And, oh, it's great. He's just so affable. I mean, you know, he's the mayor of Swansky.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, Coach, we've gone long. It's time to watch some sports tonight for ourselves.
All righty, Bucko. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, Tim. Thank you so much.
Okay, Rick.
Take care. Bye-bye. All right, that's Tim Kearns, our super analyst and ambassador of goodwill. I'm speaking now on behalf of Tim and Bill Newell, who is pounding away at the keyboard and putting interviews up as we speak. And getting stuff ready for the website for tomorrow. Lots of interviews coming up with all sports, but obviously a focus on high school football this week once again. And, of course, check out our newscast as well. We have our daily North Shore Today news post, which has about a 3 to 5 minute newscast every day, but lots and lots of great local information, community news notes. So that's it. I'm done. I'm Rick Moore, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. Be well.